Welcome into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Of course, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, and Morley Robbins joining us live in studio, which is very good because normally he's with us by phone, and he's also live in studio with us today. And, of course, along the way, if you have any questions for the two gents, feel free to give us a call, text anytime throughout the broadcast. You can do that at 806-745-5800. That's 806-745-5800. Of course, also brought to you by Veritas Medical. Check out the website, veritasmedical.com, for past archived programs. You can certainly pick up on those programs and listen at any time at your leisure. I would say that at the Lubbock Wellness Expo was a huge success on Saturday. And I had several people, Dr. Edwards, that had come up to me. One gentleman in particular came up to the radio booth and said, I love y'all's show. I listen every Monday. And if I miss it, I just go to Veritas Medical and I pick up the archived program. And he said, ever since I started listening to you two guys or the show, he said, I started taking serious. And he said, I'm also a patient of Veritas now. He said he joined the practice and is a patient. And he said, I'm out there 2 to 4 miles every morning. I walk. I listen to the shows as I walk that 2 to 4 miles, and I'm getting back in shape, and I feel so much better. He'd struggled with health issues his whole life and was just a former retired banker. And he said, when I listen to you, it just motivates me. And I said, well, I really appreciate that. And he was just really nice. But I could tell hundreds. I could tell many stories like that that I encountered over the Saturday at the Wellness Expo. And your talk was fantastic. Great crowd Saturday there to hear you speak. And so it was just a good time, and we're looking forward to 2021 doing that again.
Yeah, well, thank you. It was a great weekend. Thank you all for sponsoring it, and, of course, Melody and Debbie Hernandez for being the drivers of it and organizing and putting it all together. It was a great, great time. I was very impressed with just the setup, the number of vendors, too. It was quality vendors, and so many of them. I told somebody that the Weston A. Price conference in Dallas in November, to me, the vendors that were here were at least neck and neck, if not more than and better than.
Yeah, Morley said that to me, too, and I thought, really? That's pretty.
I mean,
impressive. For a show, and it's going to grow, and it's good.
Yeah, so it's definitely a movement that has gained momentum, and it's good because we need an alternative to the status quo when it comes to health care. There's no doubt, and that was kind of the point of my talk Saturday, was to, if people weren't aware, to make them aware of how sick we really are. And it's worsening year by year. I mean, some of those studies I pointed out Saturday were brand new studies. I mean, that millennial health study out of Blue Cross and Blue Shields showing 8 out of the top 10 conditions in millennials have increased by double digits since 2014.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
We got a text this morning, just real quick. Again, if you want to text in, got a question, feel free to text. The question was, and I'm sure that We had a vendor there at the show that did this, but she's asking, Jennifer says, well, my friend has been struggling with depression and anxiety and is looking into ketamine for treatment. Do you know much about this and its effectiveness?
Yeah.
Ketamine. I saw we had a vendor there that does that.
Okay.
There was somebody there that was doing it.
Yeah, well, we've done that a little bit in our clinic, too, and we did that after Jim Hernstner, who he was voted the number one compounding pharmacist in America. He's out of Las Colinas in Dallas. He's a really bright guy, and he lines up a lot with what we try to do at Veritas, which is get to the root cause of things. And he called me up one day and said, hey, you need to look at this ketamine. There's some remarkable studies coming out of the NIH and Kaiser Permanente and some other groups. And what those studies basically showed was they were getting 60 to 70% remission of severe depression. Now, these patients had failed all other therapies, SSRIs, shock therapy, psychotherapy, you name the therapy, they'd failed it. And so these were the sickest of the sick, suicidal, in and out of psych hospitals, and they were getting a 60 and 70% remission rate. So pretty impressive. And ketamine is just an old anesthesia medication they used to use in the anesthesia wards to knock people out to do surgery. But they do just real low dose of it now, or in these studies, they used very low doses. So you're not knocked out, but it does alter your state of consciousness a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So you do an IV once a week. Well, there's different protocols, but basically you do an IV once a week for about 4 weeks, and there's a nose spray. You can follow up the IVs with this nose spray for a month or so and get some pretty good results. What we've seen in our clinic is the same impressive results, but it's temporary. So far what we've seen is we've had some that the results last 12 months, but it seems 3 to 6 months is kind of a more realistic. And of course, we've only done it in the worst of the worst that have failed all other therapies too. So it's a treatment option. It's one of those integrative options we talk about. So in medical school, we basically just learn SSRIs, which Zoloft, Lexapro, Wellbutrin, those kind of things. The results on those are really, really sketchy. I mean, it's 50-50 basically on that. So some patients will experience some benefit and some patients don't. And in my experience, the ones that do experience benefit seem to not have long lasting benefit, and you have to up the dose or change the med. And it's just a tough situation. And really looking deeper at the SSRIs, those drugs, it's because the mechanism of action is, over the long haul, the serotonin, which is the neurotransmitter to help stabilize your mood, serotonin is actually depleted over the long haul with those drugs. So that's why I think the outcomes just aren't that great. So bottom line, there's other integrative modalities outside of just the standard of care SSRI, and people are really looking at these integrative modalities because of the poor efficacy of the standard of care. And ketamine's one of those. It's not the cure. It's pretty amazing. I mean, we had one lady that was 20 years depressed, hadn't been out of her room in years, totally unmotivated to do anything, eat right, exercise, do any of the four pillars. I mean, I could barely talk to this lady. And now she's so happy and out in the garden and working and just living life again. So it can be dramatic. But like we tell everyone, you don't stop there. You want to keep going. What's the root cause of that anxiety and depression? So once we kind of tamp down the symptom, now let's dig deeper into the root cause.
Do you want to dig deeper?
Let's do it. Welcome, Morley Robbins, live in studio.
Yeah.
Thank you. So what is depression? It's just another example of inflammatory oxidative stress.
And that's what ketamine's doing. It's a anti-inflammatory for the neurons.
Right.
So it's knocking the inflammation down, but again, temporarily. It's like clearing the smoke out of your living room when the fire's in the kitchen.
Exactly.
That's okay for a moment, but you do need to deal with the fire, obviously.
I think what the theme of this conversation today is going to be about managing the oxygen molecule in the human body.
Mm-hmm.
There's only one metal that does it. We'll talk about that. And, you know, I'm very familiar with depression because my dad had manic depression and schizophrenia.
Yeah.
I know that condition very well. I know exactly why it happens. And it happens in bodies that have too much iron and not enough bioavailable copper to eliminate the oxidative stress. And what is inflammation? That is stage 2 of oxidative stress.
Yeah.
Stage 3 is cells start dying.
Yeah. And so I just want to reiterate that oxygen is activated by copper. So copper is going to allow that oxygen to be utilized like it's supposed to be, mm-hmm, to make energy. When you don't have enough of bioavailable copper and in an environment of excess iron, then that oxygen is not utilized to make energy. It's utilized to make rust.
Yeah.
And that's what Morley just said, drives the inflammation. So managing oxygen, you said, is what this conversation is going to go towards, and that's awesome, because if you don't manage oxygen, what you end up doing is managing your symptoms.
Exactly.
And that's why the U.S. health outcomes are so poor. They're abysmal, actually, and that was, again, the point of my talk. These outcomes are so bad because we're just managing a symptom,
right,
as opposed to managing the oxygen, getting to the very root of the problem. And reactive oxygen species, which is what this unmanaged oxygen is going to create, the free radical theory of aging, you could look that up, listeners, Google that, or just Google free radicals plus depression, or free radicals plus high cholesterol, or free radicals plus heart disease, Alzheimer's, ulcerative colitis, you name it, skin wrinkles, I mean anything. And there's this excess of oxidative stress, free radicals, exhaust, when you can't manage oxygen appropriately. And so your other option is just to treat a symptom. And as we see, we don't do well long term, just like with ketamine. I mean, that's okay temporarily, but long term, you got to deal with the root cause of inflammation.
Yeah, ketamine is just another crutch.
Yes, I agree.
So people like easy. You know, it was actually Lao Tzu who said, people would rather believe a simple lie than the complex truth. Mm-hmm. So people want easy. Yeah. And so in a nutshell, if you can't make optimal ATP, optimal energy, you're going to make plaque. Mm-hmm. Whether that plaque is in your heart, in your brain, in your liver, doesn't matter where it is. And that the fancy term for plaque is called atherosclerosis. It's a hardening of the material. And it's all because it's the whole process starts when energy levels start to drop in the cells.
Mm-hmm.
Why is energy dropping in the cells? Because the cells can't activate oxygen.
Right.
Because there's not enough copper.
Right.
And one of my favorite cartoons is, because we're going to talk about cholesterol today, but one of my favorite cartoons is a fish in the water talking to a lungfish, and the lungfish was one of the first creatures to come out of the water and go onto the land. And the waterfish says, you know, all that air breathing will be the death of you. And the lungfish responds back, don't worry, my doctor says I have high cholesterol. Now, for those who don't know the history of cholesterol, you're like, well, that doesn't make sense. You know, what's going on here? Well, we live on a planet with oxygen, but oxygen has not always been on this planet. And we can debate the accuracy or the validity of the astrobiologists, but depending upon who you talk with, they theorize that oxygen first started to appear between 2.37 billion and 2.45 billion years ago. So it's a long time. So that's a long time ago, and we can debate the accuracy of that. But what's important to know about that, if you accept that time frame, where did the oxygen come from? It came from bacteria called cyanobacteria. What is cyano? It's blue. Technically, it's turquoise. But cyano is blue bacteria that were splitting water, and that released oxygen. And that is the earliest form of photosynthesis that was recorded on the planet. Now, what most people don't know is that there's three key enzymes involved in photosynthesis, but the one in the middle is called plastocyanin, and it's a copper-dependent enzyme. And copper is, in fact, enabling photosynthesis to release oxygen into the air. And when that oxygen became 0.1%, it killed 99% of life on the planet because it was all anaerobic, living on iron. Again, the planet is dominated by iron. So that process of bringing oxygen onto the planet was copper dependent. And what also emerged at almost exactly the same time were three components that relate to copper. One are enzymes called multi-copper oxidases, and they are found in bacteria, and those bacteria became our mitochondria. That's the very origin of the mitochondria's ability to turn oxygen into water to release energy. The second thing that emerged are antioxidant enzymes. There's a whole series of them. There's superoxide dismutase, catalase, glutathione peroxidase, peroxidase. These are amazing enzymes, and they're 1,000 times stronger than vitamin C or vitamin E. They're incredibly powerful, and they manage the exhaust that's given off when you're trying to make energy. But there's a third component that emerged at exactly the same time, and it's called cholesterol. So cholesterol goes back to the very beginning of life forms on the planet that were breathing oxygen, just as the lungfish says, I'm not worried, I've got cholesterol. And in fact, there are 8 genes that are activated by copper to enable the synthesis of cholesterol. And what happened in the country was we were all spooked by the words high and low, and we got fearful of high cholesterol, not knowing that what the whole process is about is regulating oxygen, and the gift to higher life forms is copper, bioavailable copper, because it enables the production of energy, the elimination of exhaust. And what does cholesterol do? It stores oxygen. There's 11 molecules of oxygen in each molecule of cholesterol. So it becomes a sink for oxygen in a body that can't metabolize it. And that's exactly why cholesterol rises in an inflammatory process. What is inflammation? It's just a clinical sign that the mitochondria aren't able to activate fully the oxygen. So all these issues are related to each other. You know, making energy, clearing exhaust, and then storing oxygen. And that's simple. And we need bioavailable copper. What starts to get in the way of making energy? A buildup of iron. Why does the iron start to build up? Because the body can't recycle it. And if the body can't recycle the iron inside the cells, it goes into what's called the labile iron pool. And labile sounds really sweet, but it's highly reactive, very toxic. And where is, when the scientists say cellular label iron pool, what I learned the other day is what they really mean, wink, wink, oh, it's mitochondrial iron. That's really what it is. And the iron building up in the mitochondria kills the ability of complex 4 to activate oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all very simple dynamics revolving around the oxygen molecule. We can't live without oxygen, but we can't age without oxidants.
Right.
And that's the absolute essence of what life on planet Earth is all about. It's managing oxygen.
Right. Yeah, no doubt about that. And I agree, it is debatable.
Yep,
the theories on the these different things emerging versus they emerged when they were created, and that's a debate for another show or time. The point, to me, the main take-home point is this oxygen thing. Obviously, it's clear. Oxygen causes rust. It drives inflammation.
Right.
And bioavailable copper is the thing that allows this oxygen to be used properly. And the excess iron, which we've added to the food. I want to remind people, we've added this iron to our food since the 40s. And when the iron's in you, it's in you. There's no known excretory mechanism for iron, because I have people all the time tell me, no, Doc, I've been eating well. You know, I've been eating healthy and not eating iron-fortified foods for a few years now. Well, what about 10 years ago, 20 years, you know, you're 50 years before? Because once the iron's in you, it's in you. There's no known mechanism to dump it, to excrete it. You slough just a little bit every day, you know, just normal skin sloughing in your bowel or whatever. But that equals to about 0.9 milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've talked about before, one cup of Cheerios, multigrain Cheerios, had like 18 milligrams in one cup of Cheerios. So the iron, because of the iron fortification. My point is, if you're naturally going to slough just under 1 milligram, you're definitely going to absorb and store in your body way more than 1 milligram if you ate the standard American diet. And it will take a very long time to slough enough iron out of you. In fact, it won't happen. So it gets stored in the tissues, and that's the problem. Your blood test may say, no, you look okay, normal, or even low, but it could be stored in the tissue.
Right.
And without the bioavailable copper, which again is in whole food vitamin C and organ meats primarily, both of which we're lacking in our diet, and you need retinol from animal-based fats. not plant-based fats, animal-based fats. We can go off on a tangent there if we want to. But so cod liver oil, obviously tallow and real butter and heavy cream and all the traditional animal-based fats. Dr. Liz is in the background here, Morley's wife. She reminded me this morning, FAT, fat from animal tissue. But anyways, retinol, vitamin A from animal fat, is needed for that copper to work properly, to deal with oxygen properly. And we're missing all that. We're not eating organ meats. We're not eating animal fats. We're not getting our whole food vitamin C anymore. We're getting ascorbic acid. We're eating high fructose corn syrup. You know, we've gone down that road, so I won't go down it again. But the point is, we're in an environment in America today where we have plenty of excess iron because of iron fortification, and we don't have any bioavailable copper. So in that recipe for disaster, oxygen drives inflammation instead of activating us for energy. So back to cholesterol. Studies have shown people as they age into their 70s, 80s, 90s, people that live the longest and healthiest with the least amount of disease tend to be the ones with the highest cholesterol.
That's right.
And now thinking about it from the realm of, well, cholesterol is rising to deal with, to basically store extra oxygen that you're not able to turn into energy. Well, I could see that naturally happening as we mature through life and get into that 70s and 80s and 90s. Just the wear and tear of life in general will start to slow us down some. As from a mitochondria perspective, I can imagine our carburetor will be a little less efficient when we're 90 than when we're 20. So maybe we can't utilize the oxygen as well. And so the cholesterol's there to store that extra oxygen as opposed to mixing with iron to drive inflammation. It's a perfect mechanism to help us age gracefully and symptom-free is this cholesterol rising.
And one of the dynamics that's happening now is that a lot of people are on statins to lower their cholesterol.
Right.
And the incidence of heart disease hasn't really slowed down much, but what has taken off like a rocket is another form of atherosclerosis called Alzheimer's.
Right.
And so,
and congestive heart failure.
Yes.
Which
yes.
means the muscle's actually weakened.
Right.
Has no energy.
Right.
And congestive heart failure has gone through the roof since statins. Alzheimer's also.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that there's another player in this process. Again, most people know what inflammation is, or they've heard the term, and chronic inflammation is pervasive. Every condition out there has some connection back to inflammation.
Yeah.
Well, what's the chemical that's really attached to inflammation? It's called histamines. So what do histamines do? So again, debatable point. Where we're talking about billions of years, histamine showed up about 260 million years ago. Very different time frame. And what do? They change the mineral dynamics of the cell. So the cell is supposed to have lots of magnesium and lots of potassium inside the cell, and outside the cell is supposed to have lots of calcium and lots of sodium. And that creates a gradient to create electricity, having that dynamic. When histamines show up because the body perceives a stress, it causes the magnesium and potassium to leave the cell. Calcium and sodium flood the cell with water, and there's a 50% loss of energy. Well, I've been aware of that dynamic and started reading some articles yesterday, and what I learned is that histamine is responding to what's called oxygen glucose deficit. As soon as the body perceives that it can't make energy, blows the whistle, calls in histamines on the spot. And what's the histamine really doing? Again, this is a natural biological response to a change in the ability to activate oxygen. The body is lowering the capacity to do that because it knows it doesn't have copper. And what is the known mechanism to clear histamines? The enzyme is called histaminase. It's also called diamine oxidase. And there's a more fancy form that's found inside the liver called N-methyl histamine transferase. And again, All of those enzymes that are clearing histamines are run by bioavailable copper. And the guys who discovered the protein that makes copper usable, it's called ceruloplasmin, Holmberg and Laurel in 1948, in the second paragraph of their article, pointed out that ceruloplasmin has a 400% increase in histaminase activity in the presence of histamines. And so the body has these natural mechanisms of clearing these chemical agents that are trying to respond to oxidative stress. But if you don't have copper, if you have too much iron, they don't work.
Right.
And so there's these incredible mechanisms and pathways that are present to help the body to regulate oxygen. But again, if you're going to talk oxygen, you better talk about the only metal that can manage it, and that's copper.
Right. And we will talk more about that bioavailable copper when we get back from the break. We may touch a little bit on histamines and foods, because I do have patients come in who are aware that there are certain foods that are higher in histamines, and it tends to aggravate them. So they avoid those foods. But what's a deeper and better way to deal with that? So when we get back from the break, we'll talk more about that, maybe wrap up the cholesterol, but also want to talk about some action steps to take, which our long-term listeners will know already. But that was one of my wishes on the Saturday's talk, was I didn't have the time to go into, okay, what do we do about this? So when we get back from the break, we'll talk about what we do about it.
Welcome back into You're the Cure right here on AM 580. Of course, Dr. Ben Edwards, MD, and Morley Robbins, Root Cause Protocol right here on the show. We're about 15 minutes away from the top of the hour. By the way, if you have a text along the way, I'd be happy to read those. If you got a question, you can always send us a text at 806-745-5800, 806-745-5800. Let's go to the text line. This one, Joni says, I am so grateful that God directed my steps to Morley Robbins Magnesium Advocacy Group in 2013 and then becoming a Veritas medical patient late in 2018. Thank you. And by the way, I was full of iron and I'm still at it.
Mm.
Okay.
Well, keep up the good work, Joni.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's
I guess
great.
Y'all know her. She's a patient of yours.
Oh, I know
yeah.
who Joni is.
No, you know
oh,
her too.
I know who Joni
okay,
is.
Well, y'all know her. Okay.
God bless you, Joni.
All right, good.
Yeah, it does our heart well to get some positive feedback, to know people are listening and then implementing, because it's one thing to get educated, then you got to go implement. And it's hard in this world where we get a constant barrage of television ads and commentary and, you know, your mainstream kind of thought, conventional medical thought on things. And man, I can't even watch TV anymore because of the pharmaceutical ads. It just absolutely, you want to talk about robbing the peace pillar.
It's all over, man, isn't it?
I just think, gosh, guys, can't you at least say your diet and lifestyle is really causing this? And we know you're not going to change your diet and lifestyle. Therefore, you might want to take our medicine. You know, at least throw us a bone. Say something to inform. And that's really what we're all about, and what this show is about, is informed consent. If people had the information and knew that of the top 12 statin studies, the number needed to treat, and don't quote me exactly, but it's like 900. Number needed to treat, and Dr. Brownstein goes through this thoroughly in his book, The Statin Disaster. Number needed to treat is just a statistical number that tells a doctor, hey, this is how many patients you're going to need to treat with this drug to get one person to have the outcome that you're hoping to have. So with a statin, the outcome you hope to have is not have a heart attack or die from a heart attack. And the number needed to treat on that is somewhere close to 900 when you average all the top 12 studies together. And a doctor really shouldn't even consider a drug if the number needed to treat's over 20. Because you get over 20, you're running into so many side effect potentials. There's no point in treating that many 900 patients just to help one patient. So anyways, don't get me started on informed consent and statins. And I mean, a quarter of the women are going to develop type 2 diabetes, according to the research on statins. And how many of those women are going to prevent a heart attack and death by using the statin? Less than 1%.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy. And so anyways,
And the main question is, how is that drug changing your body's ability to manage oxygen?
Exactly.
It's managing a number for cholesterol. Mm-hmm. It's doing nothing to change the oxygen metabolism in the body.
Right. And when you see a page of side effects that, is in Dr. Brownstein's book, I think he lists out almost 100 different potential diseases or symptoms that could be the result of a statin. When you see that many, then you know that drug's hitting an enzyme or a receptor that's blocking some major function that's going to impact the utilization of the oxygen, the ability to make the energy, the body's ability to function normally. You can't just go in there and start monkeying with these enzymes and receptors without expecting unintended consequences. And that's why medical errors and drugs, prescription drugs taken the right way, not overdosing, is a third leading cause of death in America. And heart disease probably is number one, because you mentioned the other day, I think it was in a lecture to the nurse practitioners at the office, the heart has a heart muscle cell has 5,000 mitochondria. Mm-hmm. As opposed to the other cells in your body, like your GI tract or your skin or your whatever, has maybe 100 mitochondria per cell.
Right.
And the heart muscle's got 5,000 per cell. So if you're doing something, living a life, eating a diet, if you're doing something that's compromising mitochondria, then the cells that have the most, which is your heart muscles cells, probably going to have the biggest impact. And there we see it, the number one killer in America.
So the heart needs to beat 72 times a minute in order to stay healthy, right? Isn't that the average pulse, 72?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, depend on your... Between 60 and 100 is officially normal. If you get below 60, you're officially slow, and above 100, you're officially fast, but 72 is a good average.
To have one beat of the heart needs to make 1 billion ATP.
Mm.
One beat.
Whoa.
That's a lot of energy.
That's a lot of energy. Wow. And what's important is that the heart, it's not a pump. I know you've had that conversation with Tom Cowan. Totally agree. But what it really is it's a nuclear reactor. It's an electromagnetic force field around your body, putting out this enormous amount of energy. Some say, I think it's the folks at HeartMath, talk about a 9-foot radius around your body.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a donut. And the body's really smart. And if it knows that it's not putting out 1 billion ATP per beat, it starts to change physiology.
Mm-hmm.
It starts to adapt. It says, wow, we're not managing this oxygen very well, are we? And so there's a whole cascade of changes. They're all related back to oxygen and the ability to make energy, clear the exhaust, or store the oxygen.
Right.
And those are to me, as I've come to really study this, that's what it's all about. We've got to be able to manage oxygen more effectively, and if we don't, we rust.
Yep. Pretty simple. And I do want to mention the 1% of people who have some improvement with a statin, it has an anti-inflammatory effect.
Right.
And that's the component that's adding any amount of benefit. But just like the ketamine earlier in the show with depression, there's an anti-inflammatory effect of ketamine in the brain. So it decreases these symptoms of inflammation, which were depression symptoms in those patients. But inflammatory symptoms that the statins can block a little bit of, you can get a little bit of benefit. But obviously, there's a lot better ways to deal with inflammation than taking a statin.
In order to control inflammation, you've got to have what's called bioavailable copper. We've talked about that. So how do we make bioavailable copper? Well, we got to have copper in our diet, and we have to have retinol to load the protein ceruloplasm with copper. So we got to have copper and retinol. What are copper and retinol called? Anti-inflammatory nutrients. Copper is an anti-inflammatory. Retinol is an anti-inflammatory. And I guess I would run to the nutrients that Mother Nature designed before I would run to a test tube synthetic chemical that's going to help, 1%?
Yep.
Just the numbers are just unbelievable.
Yeah, and the deception that's out there, I showed this slide in the talk, a 36% reduction in heart attack is what the ad in the magazine and newspaper said when the Lipitor trial first came out. But then down in the fine print, there was an asterisk on that 36%. And the 36% was huge. I mean, it's the biggest print in the whole ad with an asterisk. And if you go way down there with the magnifying glass and look at the asterisk, it said, in a clinical trial, this means that 3% of the people on placebo had a heart attack and 2% of people on Lipitor had a heart attack. So the difference was 1%. And they do tell you that. It is down there in the very fine print.
You must be the only person who takes the time to read that.
Right. The statistical gymnastics to change 1% to 36%, so you can print that in the front page of the Wall Street Journal, is quite incredible. And again, Dr. Brownstein goes through those statistical gymnastics in his book, The Statin Disaster. And I'd recommend people read that. But back to what do we do about it, because you won't get this in the Statin Disaster book fully. I think he talks about eat real food and eat some salt and some basic stuff, and that's all great. Don't be a standard American. Any step down the road of not being a standard American
that's
is
right.
a beneficial step, period. But let's take as many steps as we can down that road back to how our ancestors ate and lived as best we can. And what Morley just advised there was the copper and the retinol. So you find copper and whole food vitamin C. That means you've got to eat some colorful things. That's where the vitamin C's at. But we've talked about on the show, the vitamin C gets depleted very quickly once you pick that green bean or lime or whatever fruit and vegetable it is. So eating locally is best. Bioavailable copper is found in organ meats. We all eat muscle meats instead of the organ meats these days, so get back to eating muscle meats. Those are probably the two best sources. You can also get it in bee pollen.
Mm-hmm.
And there are some other, there's a serum that...
Copper serum.
There's our other ways to get that, but dietarily, that's probably your best bet. Get back to some organ meats.
Yeah.
And then some of the other steps, we want to do trace minerals.
Absolutely.
So there's trace mineral drops you can get, or sea salt, another place to get trace minerals instead of regular table salt. We want to add back in some magnesium.
Mm-hmm.
We burn through our magnesium under stress. Of course, our food's depleted of magnesium also.
What I learned the other day is that any food that is missing magnesium is missing copper. Any food that's missing copper is missing magnesium.
Go hand in hand.
They go hand in hand.
Hand in glove.
Yeah.
No doubt.
Another important piece to consider, though, is blood donation. I mentioned earlier in the show, your body will slough a little bit, but there's really no good excretory mechanism to dump a lot of iron besides blood loss. Mm-hmm. So donating blood is a great step, which reminds me, we have a blood drive at Veritas this Friday the 17th. You can email michael@veritasmedical.com to reserve a slot or get more information. But routine blood donations is great because that's going to obviously dump the iron that's in your blood, but then the body triggers a mechanism to pull the iron out of your tissue to make more blood.
What about text line? Long-term fasting, does it help to reduce the iron load?
Yes, it does.
And second one is, how about, is it safe to just stop taking statins? On the text line.
I'm going to let Dr. Ben respond to that. A lot of questions.
Officially, that's medical advice. You need to talk with your medical doctor that knows your personal history well.
Just so the listeners know, Dr. Liz had a patient probably 10 years ago. He was a former Olympic athlete. He was in the 68 Olympics doing hurdles. Very interesting guy. He was on statins. We talked to him about it. And we said, you've got to talk to your doctor. You know, you've got to come to your own decision, but we said that may not be what you need to keep doing. He went and researched it. And this guy was a very intense individual. You don't get in the Olympics by being a slouch.
Right.
And he had a very intense conversation with his cardiologist. And he came to his own conclusion that he could stop cold turkey. His doctor did not stop him. But I think it's important that people need to have that conversation with their physician and know that there's literature that speaks to both sides of the medication.
Right. And I would definitely recommend, if your cardiologist isn't real open to that, if you have not had a heart attack and you're on a statin, that's called primary prevention. I mean, the statistics are very clear. So your cardiologist should know these statistics and you can go have that conversation. But if he refuses to, I would highly recommend you consider finding an integrative cardiologist who's open to looking at absolute risk reduction as opposed to relative risk reduction. And again, the Statin Disaster book by Dr. Brownstein goes through all that beautifully. And I've had many integrative cardiologists tell me there's no need to wean a poison. If you're taking a poison, you just stop the poison. Again, that's from the integrative cardiologists that lecture us at functional medicine conferences. Now, I would say if you're a smoker and you're a male and you've had a heart attack and you're a standard American and you're still smoking and you're still eating sugar and high fructose corn syrup and, you know, you're being a total standard American and you're on a high-dose statin, suddenly stopping that, I don't think it's probably the wisest thing. The wisest thing is going to be don't be a standard American first. Reverse the things that cause inflammation because it's inflamed cholesterol that's the problem. The statin is helping that smoker who's had a heart attack, is helping that smoker a little bit by an anti-inflammatory mechanism. So the smartest thing to do and what your cardiologist should recommend for you to do is stop eating high fructose corn syrup and stop eating the enriched grains and stop the standard American diet in general. These are the things that lead to inflammation. What David Diamond at the Weston A. Price Conference was clear in his presentation was the statins are going to drop your total cholesterol number, all right. They're going to drop your LDL also. But they are not going to flip your LDL from big fluffy LDL, which is actually a healthy and protective LDL, and the small dense LDL is a pro-inflammatory LDL. Well, the small dense one is in response to inflammation. When you're inflamed in the body flips your big fluffy to small dense. Statins don't flip it back. So it's actually not making you healthier, and that's why the stats show that it doesn't work very well.
The process is driven by iron.
What will flip it back is deal with the iron, deal with the inflammation, and then you'll flip from small dense back to big fluffy. You'll actually be benefiting yourself. But that has nothing to do with the statin. So get informed, then go talk to your doctor, and then probably he can help you to just stop that thing.
So back to the text line. We've got some more text to get here. One text says, we didn't get to the long-term fasting. Long-term fasting will help reduce iron load.
It will.
Not as much as maybe going and donating blood, but what happens when you go to autophagy? And
autophagy will clear iron.
It will?
Yes. Not the same way that a blood donation does, but it's a natural mechanism that the body uses to clear excess iron.
So to get to autophagy, you've got to fast for more than 24 hours with no food. I think, right? About 24 before you even get into that sweet spot of 24 to 72 hours, right?
Yep, and it cranks up. The longer you go, the more you get the autophagy, which autophagy is just basically chewing up your old, inefficient, and dying cells, the ones that are probably most inflamed and have the least efficient mitochondria.
So if you do that, say 48 hours once a week or something on average.
It'll help some. It'll help a little. Nothing like a blood donation.
It won't. Okay. Yeah. Okay.
And if you're eating standard American in between your fast, obviously not going to help.
Gotcha. Next text was thoughts about alpha lipoic acid?
A lot of confusion about ALA. It chelates iron, but it also chelates copper. And so I'm very reticent to recommend ALA.
As a supplement to take?
Yes, right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, there are clinics that do that IV therapy ALA, and hopefully I've been clear in the past. All these different integrative modalities can be temporarily beneficial. I mean, clinically, you can see some benefit. You can see symptom reduction. You can see even some anti-inflammatory effects. And so that's what some of these clinics will do and get that temporary benefit, but you have to keep going back and doing more of it, or you never get all the way well. You're managing. It's another way, kind of a green version, I've called it in the past, of the conventional medicine. Mm-hmm. So you can take pharmaceuticals to manage your symptoms, or you can do a green version of that.
Which is the ALA.
Well, there's,
There's a
bunch of different ones, and I would throw ALA into that. So every case is unique and individual, and I would never say no, never. Morley's always going to come at you with the science and with the hard facts. And then clinically, you have to decide with that patient, you know, where are they at? How inflamed are they? How are they going to go do a blood donation?
Exactly.
Are they going to eat beef liver? Are they going to get stop being a standard American, or are they not? Or is it going to take them a year to get convinced and educated and, you know, all these different...
And how committed are they to...
Yeah, how committed are they? And there's lots of factors that go into that. So I don't want people to get the impression... I mean, I'm always going to encourage and push people to never stop short of the root cause, you know. But if you need to treat a symptom temporarily... You know, some people need to.
Next text, this one says, for 8+ years, I've suffered with torturous chronic whole body itching and severe shooting pains, pins, and needles daily. And recently, I couldn't walk from joint pain. I've tried many healthy strategies, including the best foods, best water, biohacking, et cetera, et cetera. In short, the donation of blood and following the root cause protocol has been key. Iron can be toxic. Lack of peace, a killer. I'm so grateful to be getting my life back.
Well, me too. It's great to see people get their lives back, and we all have our stories. We all have our things. We live in an imperfect world, and events happen in our lives that cause us to think certain ways. It causes us to go into fight or flight mode and lose our peace. And that really is the underlying mechanism of this whole cascade of events. Of course, iron in our food and the horrible toxic diet and the environment, all this stuff, there's lots of factors. But those stressors, those thoughts that drive the stress and the fight or flight mechanisms, that underpins, because that shifts metabolically and your pH and all these things in the cell that really causes that iron to come in, the magnesium to go out, the copper to be kicked out of ceruloplasm, and just this cascade of things happen. So we need to address it all. So it's a good point that I know that patient is doing that.
Yeah, it takes a lot of courage to do what they're doing, but I think it's important to reinforce that when we have a lack of peace, we go into a state of fear.
Mm-hmm.
At some level, maybe subconscious, but we are in a state of fear. And it's scientifically proven that fear creates hypoxia, and we've been trained to think that means lack of oxygen. What it really means is inability to activate oxygen. So again, it just redoubles the importance of the peace pillar in being able to have that sense of resolve, but also calm and faith that you will get through this.
Right. Yep. And I would encourage everybody who's struggling to understand this isn't a step 1, 2, 3, you're cured. It's a process. Everybody's got their road they need to walk down. And you need to find someone to walk that with you and encourage you and love on you and give you the truthful counsel and advice that you need to make the right decisions.
Let me just make one closing comment here, because I know we're coming up on the bewitching hour. There's a very important metabolic dance between bioavailable copper and oxygen. We've talked about that for the bulk of this program. And it is a dance. Again, that oxygen is being used to make energy, and you've got to clear that exhaust. And if you can't do that effectively, you're gonna need to make more cholesterol. There are three signs of change in the body that the oxidative stress is building. Your blood sugar levels will rise, your cholesterol levels will rise, and your blood pressure will rise. Those are all three known mechanisms of rising oxidative stress. What are they all linked to? Hydrogen peroxide. Hydrogen peroxide is one of those exhaust components that's given off when the mitochondria can't do its job completely. Rising blood sugar and rising cholesterol and rising blood pressure are not diseases. They're just indications that the dance with oxygen isn't going right. And I think people need to understand that, at least from my perspective, I'll just speak for myself, I would really encourage people not to see them as diseases, because I think the only real disease on the planet is thinking that you're broken. All you are is out of balance, and there are mechanisms to bring the body back into balance. That's the basis of the root cause protocol. That's the basis of the Veritas Clinic, is to really help people get back to that root process of restoring the body's ability to manage oxygen, to make energy, And what's important for people to know, and this is the work of Jerry Tennant down in Dallas, if the cell can't make energy, it doesn't have the right frequency. And when the frequency of the cell begins to change, that's when the pathogens wake up. The pathogens are just being opportunistic. And what are the pathogens looking for? They're looking for iron. So, again, this whole process is, it's a torturous fight over iron and oxygen on this planet. And humans are in a unique position to be able to manage both if they have bioavailable copper.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Thank you, Morley, for being here.
Absolutely.
It's always fun to learn more from you. And hopefully everyone got encouraged today to go out there and not be a standard American. I think we'll get an audio recording of the conference this weekend, and maybe I'll have my IT guy marry my slides to the audio, and we'll put it out there. But you'll walk away with, okay, what do we do about it? And what you do about it is don't do what you've always done as a standard American. Learn how to eat different, move a little every day, hydrate well, oxygenate yourself properly. The root cause protocol is a great step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 on practical steps to take. Veritas Wellness, I almost forgot to mention, Veritas Wellness launched this weekend. And Veritas Wellness is a 6-week course. And we've got wellness navigators who can help you to navigate through some of my teachings, but mostly it's the support stuff. How do you eat different? How do you cook beef liver? How do you just live a non-standard American life? And so there'll be group classes, one-on-one appointments with these wellness navigators, daily education and support available through video and audio means, and written material, menus, recipes, just all the support someone would need. So Veritas Wellness is going to be launching its beta class, I'd say. We're going to do this first class in this coming month and see how that goes. Our goal is to perfect it and make it very efficient and very user-friendly, and then we'll spread it throughout the state and the country and the world to help teach you how to be not a standard American. So we'll talk more about that in the future, though.
Okay.
Thank you, Morley. Morley's website, rcp123.org. Mm-hmm. Go there to learn more, veritasmedical.com or veritashealthycommunity.com.
And let us know when you get that recording done, because people are looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Yeah, will do.
Hey, thanks a lot, gentlemen. Y'all have a great rest of the week. I'll see you back here next Monday on You're the Cure, Dr. Edwards. And Morley, I guess I'll see you back here in February, first Monday, February.
Absolutely.
Probably via telephone. You won't be live again.
No.
Maybe,
unless,
maybe not.
Unless you want to pay for it, man.
Well, I say live. It's not like you call in and you're dead. You know, in the studio.
I know.
Present in the studio.
It's always more fun to be here.
Anyway, it's all good. Hey, thanks, guys. Have a great rest of the week.
Thank you.
Stick around. We'll come right back with more right here on AM 580.